You are tuned into Pentimental with hosts John and Tom McGuire. Pentimental is a dialogue-based show that elucidates the intersections between synchronicity, science, culture, and psychonautics. Through the medium of open-minded dialogue, we explore the possibility that the only way out is in. www.thesyncbook.com/radio.
This is John McGuire, and you are listening to Pentimental on Syncbook Radio. Thanks again to the very talented Marty Leeds for crafting the show lead-in. Today, episode number 3, we have joining us for a one-on-one conversation, Dexy and Chris Valentine, who together form the band Magic Wands, as well as a trilogue with Richard Merrick, an acoustical engineer and author of several books including Interference, The Venus Blueprint, and the soon-to-be-finished The Vajra Sequence. I guess the unifying theme for this episode is music, music theory, the physical experience of music, the philosophy of music, and of course synchronicity and how that might link everything together. As always, I selected these particular guests hoping they would sync up unconsciously or resonate in some meaningful way. It was a lot of fun as usual, and I hope you all enjoy it. Thanks again for tuning in.
Chris and Dexy Valentine of the Magic Wands. They're a band that caught my attention more recently, but I feel like I've known them for longer just for strange synchronistic reasons. And so I'm very happy to have them on and excited to have a conversation with them. So it's a little bit of worlds colliding for me, and that's fun and strange. And, you know, starting off, you two are a group, and I want to explore the dynamics of you two as a group, but maybe you can each kind of introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit of how you came into music on your own and developed as artists on your own before you found each other, if that's not too difficult a question.
Hi, I'm Dexy. I just started playing the piano, I think, when I was like 7 years old or something. And then I got into guitar when I was about 13. And then by the time I was 17, I just like didn't like school. So I would cut school to go home and play instruments and just started writing songs. And then in my 20s, I was like, okay, I'm going to go to LA, try to start a band. Came out here as a solo artist and had a few different bands. And then I ended up meeting Chris online. And he's like, hey, do you want to start a band? And I was like, okay. So I just moved to Nashville.
And Chris, what about you? How did you come into music and what brought you into where you are now?
It was just like always a part of my life. Like my family was always playing music and somebody's always playing something. There's a lot of records. My dad played guitar and had a band and things like that. So it was just natural to pick it up and start playing, you know, and then do it for a while and you do it longer and longer. And then all of a sudden you're doing it for like, and then it feels, you know, it's just like natural. So I've been doing music for a long time. And when we met, you know, basically it was right at the point I met Dexy when we were both looking to like start like a new thing, you know, and it was just kind of like the right time. It's kind of like the right timing to do a new thing. And that's why we got together.
Maybe the story is pretty straightforward and maybe not worth exploring, but how did you find each other? Was there any kind of synchronicity or weird coincidence or just kind of happenstance or serendipity involved?
There kind of was a weird coincidence. I had a band in LA and I played a show, and Chris's at the time girlfriend was writing for the newspaper here, and she wanted to come interview the band or come see the band. So she came with Chris to the show, and Chris and I met for about 5 minutes. And then about a year later, I started sort of solo side project thing and put a song up online. It was like a totally different band, totally different style music. And Chris happened to come across it and not realize that it was me from the other band who he'd already met. And then he wrote me about the song and he loved it. And that's how we started talking. So it was, and then we figured out later, like, oh, wait a minute. We actually met because you liked my other band that you came to see. He was like visiting LA when we played the show. So.
Okay. That's pretty freaky. That's definitely a weird coincidence. That's definitely.
I've had those kinds of coincidences for so long that it's like become normal now.
Okay. Why don't we just get in there then and explore that real quick. How do you notice synchronicity in your life, or if that's been going on a long time, how have you incorporated it, or what has it done for you on a personal level, or however you want to approach that question?
That could go so deep, man.
That's the whole point. And again, it goes far or as not far as you want to. And that's a hard question to handle, but.
It's just if you're, I don't know. I mean, for me, it's, I was always on sort of a quest, you know, looking for those kinds of things, you know, like looking for the magic in life and coincidences to happen. And then they just started happening. I don't feel like it's been happening as much lately because I'm not really looking for it or thinking about it. Or if it happens, I'm just like kind of used to it by now. But, you know, just weird things happen. Like, you know, I met this guy once at a concert and we hit it off. And then I went to Europe and I was kind of like trying to sneak up a few rows to get closer to the stage, and like some guy yells ouch, and like I'd stepped on his toe and it was the same person from who I'd met in America. It was like, you know, stuff like that.
Well, as far as the synchronicity stuff, I mean, like, I feel like once you kind of like become aware that it's even like a thing, and once you get past the whole like, oh, it's just a coincidence that, you know, people say that it's just a coincidence. Like there's no coincidences. I mean, like, if we're really going to get into it, then let's get into it. Like, you put out like a vibration to the universe, and whatever you're putting out is going to come back to you. So it's like, there's no really coincidences that there's these synchronicities that you have in your life. It's like interesting to like when they happen for sure, but it's definitely like a reflection of like what you're already like have been putting out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're kind of creating your own reality. A lot of people think that reality happens to them and don't realize that, you know, you can create it yourself by you know, what you're thinking about or what you're dreaming about.
What you're feeling.
You're manifesting your life.
You know? Right. And there's a subtlety to it. You know, I think in our culture, people would look at that and say, well, the secret tells me that. And all I have to do is think about the sports car in my driveway and I'm going to get it. That's like an inverted form of mysticism, or an inverted form of, I see synchronicity as part of the shamanic tradition. And it's not everything to the shamanic tradition, but it's a large part of how reality is viewed and interpreted and pursued. And so so when you say like we create our reality, I agree in a lot of ways. And like you're saying, like we're sending stuff out on an implicit level or an implied level or a subtle level that we don't even realize. But that doesn't mean that, again, you're not just going to manifest something. It's participatory, but in a way that is more acausal. It's sort of nonlinear, kind of ass backwards. And that's what people always say about synchronicities. It happened in this weird way, but everything lined up perfectly. And if that makes any sense, do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, this other fact, I mean, you can't just like dream of I thought about a Ferrari this morning and now I have one. It's like,
right.
Maybe you might see one drive by, but like, you know.
Yeah.
But it's more like, too, you have to like feel it like an emotion, too. You can't just think about stuff. Like, I really think I want something really bad. You have to like have the feeling of it, too, you know, to like cause it. But then on top of that, there's all the other factors of the universe and things going on, too. So it's not just. The secret's like great sort of for like, I don't know.
Secret's
like
really basic.
Hermeticism, you know? 101 or like really basic stuff. It's interesting for some people. But
it helps the average person who doesn't realize that they're in control of their life realize that they can be, you know?
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Oh yeah, no, that makes sense. And I agree. But at the same time, that's presented to people as kind of like a stopping point, right? It never gets any further. So
I was pretty uncomfortable with watching that DVD.
Maybe feel really weird.
It's like people are always looking for a destination. It's not about a path, right? So something like The Secret is a destination. Read this book and do the workbook and you'll get the answers. But at the same time, in the synchromistic community, a lot of times people look for treasure in the trash and also look for symbols in pop culture that kind of do give an initiatory experience to everyone that watches it. They don't even notice it, but it's on a subconscious level. It's all there. Yeah.
Yeah. It's in everything, you know, like it's even on the dollar bill. Like there's all these symbols and stuff. Like I used to look for that stuff. I was really into numerology for several years. And then I started to think, I was like, okay, I'm going nuts. Like every time I saw a number or a sequence of numbers or a certain word or something on a license plate of a car. I'm like, this means this, this means that. And then after a while, I was just like, I don't really care what it means. You know, it just, whatever. My subconscious mind's picking up something from it. That's great. But like, I just started paying way too much attention to detail. And I'm kind of just like, my brain is in a mode now where I'm not.
Yeah. I don't know. With the number stuff and things like that, I mean, I think that you can definitely like train yourself. You know how people read pendulums and things like that? Like there's a lot of like dowsing and all kinds of stuff. It's like based on like subtle energies and picking up on things or whatever. It's not like a fluke. People have been doing it for a long, long time. So it's like you can do the same thing, I think, with numbers. And you know how when people see 1111, they're like, oh, 1111, make your wish.
Well, that still resonates with me. I always get excited. I mean, I see that like a lot lately. For actually the last like 5 years, it's either 333 or 1111. And for some reason, when I see that those numbers, I get kind of a good feeling about it, but I'm not really paying attention to, you know, when I'm walking outside or driving down the street, you know, what numbers are flashing in front of me.
Yeah, it can be a bit.
Unless it's like 666.
Sure, sure. I mean, the ones that are the most obvious, but it can be distracting and at times. As monkey animals, which is part of who we are. I think we're kind of like living spirits in a lot of ways, but there's this animal side of us. And yeah, we just make patterns and do that. And occasionally we create, if we're co-creative creatures, it's what we do by nature. But then there's also just this, yeah, very strange side to it that we'd like to pretend we'll explain through science and be able to account on all cross our T's and dot our I's and we'll know it all. But I think that the lesson of all of this is that we're never going to know everything, but it's also really important to explore just on an individual development level. I mean, I don't see the point of just kind of repressing that feeling and saying, oh, this isn't real or this is a chemical thing in my brain. Well, yeah, it is a chemical thing in your brain, but what's the impetus for that chemical thing in your brain? It's like not a cause. It's a causation question. It's a chicken and the egg. There is no right answer, but I think everyone has the right to indulge in that kind of mind space. And like you said, Chris, I think it's well beyond just coincidence after a while.
If it's not coincidence, what is it? Destiny or fate?
I think so. I think it's part of it. And that doesn't mean we live in a deterministic world. It's quasi-deterministic and there's quasi-free will. It's a dance between the two that I think like the universe sends you messages, right? Through synchronicity or whatever. So that's the determinism. But then you have the free will to choose that path or not, right?
But do you believe it's predestined? Like this was planned, written in the cards before you were even born and this was all meant to happen, or it's happening as you're going?
A little from column A, a little from column B. I guess it depends on how we factor in past lives and that kind of question. And like, who's deciding what? Are you picking your own life? And then how far back does that go? And so, you know, the line between free will and determinism is pretty blurred if you're making the decisions, right? And then does that make, I know that's weird and that's kind of a strange way to answer that question, but I don't have a definite answer. And I always think of the in-between, because I can never say it's this or that, but I can lean in a direction. And so, no, I don't know the answer to that question. I just know that there are elements of both at play, and I respect both of those, and I don't resort to extremism in either direction. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And because I see it in those grandiose terms, I'm interested to talk with people that use it in their day-to-day life, and I thought speaking with a musician or musicians would be the right way to go. Because I mean, I imagine so much of your life, you meet so many people, you engage with a medium of art that is really, there's not much else that's more in tune with kind of like the universal patterning of everything, of the cosmos. It's music is the essence of almost everything. All artwork is an expression of that music, of that cooperation. But I was just, you know, it's interesting to hear you guys speak on it and your thoughts on it.
Oh yeah, no, the architecture of the pyramids is music. There's like harmonics to the actual measurements of how it's built. It's like, you know, certain chambers are built to be what would be like a musical fifth or fourth or things like that. It's definitely it's tied into like, it's all tied together, everything. It's all numbers and goes back to like the basic building blocks of the universe, which is patterns and shapes and, you know, things like that. And then music's just like a really good way to express it for sure. Colors and consciousness and fun.
But everybody's consciousness is at a different place, you know,
right?
Evolution, where sure. They're at, what they're, some people probably see things more in patterns and shapes and.
Right. But it's definitely in music for sure. And it's definitely in architecture and it's in a lot of things for sure.
And the vibration of music is really important. You know, you listen to a song that's really sort of angry and aggressive and it makes you feel tense. And then you listen to something like very cosmic and ethereal and it makes you feel lighter. And, you know, we actually use special tunings on our instrument. We tune to solfeggio frequencies. You know, that way, even if the song is a little more rockin' and aggressive, it's still soothing because it's pitched up to a higher frequency. You know,
Yeah. Well, okay. Let's explore that for a minute. It's not a 180 or anything, but it's a different direction. It's like, what are you trying to communicate through your music? And not only through the lyrics, which I found are extremely cohesive throughout your album, Aloha Moon. And that's something, again, that really hooked me after listening. It's like, you know, I pick up bands often enough where I hear a couple songs. I'm like, oh, that's pretty good. But you listen to an album and it doesn't have the cohesion I'm looking for. It doesn't have, it's missing something, right? It's not a full mandala, but your album itself, like all the albums themselves add up to something, at least in my kind of subjective, maybe kind of crazy perspective. So I guess, what are you trying to communicate through that mandala, if you want to put it in those terms? And, you know, again, like you just mentioned those frequencies you use. I mean, what other kind of tools do you use as a musician to communicate something through? Music's a physical experience. So what are you doing there?
With the lyrics?
Let's start with the lyrics and the I guess what you're trying to communicate through the music, and then what other kind of like, yeah, extra sensory stuff are you adding to the music itself to make it more of an experience? Like, again, those frequencies or what have you.
Well, for me, I wanted to do a record that was, you know, more geared towards positive lyrics, love, and spreading the message of love.
Or at least a balance between the positive and negative, kind of.
It's, well, we really didn't have much of it. Like, this record was more on the light side than, you know.
That record was kind of like, the thing that we both talked about before that, and even when we started the band, was like, we just wanted to do the music, the stuff that we kind of made, or like the kind of the goal was like to have stuff that was more, that wasn't necessarily, like, yeah, positive, I guess, in a way, but more like not negative, I guess. Like, it seemed like so much stuff and so much music that, like, when you play in bands and you play stuff, like, a lot of things that people sing about is kind of like a reaction to something, or it's like people are trying to like work through their pain in like a lot of the music. And like, granted, that's not all of music, but we both like consciously wanted to make an effort to like have music that was like either that was uplifting, but also at the same time that had at least like the balance. If there was going to be like whatever that feeling is in the pain feeling or whatever, that it was at least balanced with like something that was like uplifting or like that felt, you know, that made us feel good when we heard it, I guess, you know?
So for me, this record was like, you know, connecting to the heart chakra and the crown chakra, and a lot of the stuff we did was purple, you know, like we used a lot of violet and purple colors, and just trying to connect to those two things in people. Like, this new record we have is more like solar plexus root chakra, more like red and orange kind of.
We carefully selected the chakras we wanted to rock.
Yeah, well, it makes you feel kind of light when you listen to it. It's very floaty and spacey.
The new record?
The old one.
Oh, the old record.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was basically the idea. I mean, we were both kind of like at the time, or still are, into like cosmic kind of stuff. So that was very, really went into the music. It wasn't like we plotted it out exactly, but we knew like where we wanted it to go. You know?
Yeah, it was kind of a lot of subconscious stuff happening when we did that. But
right. I think, I think if you're subconsciously committed to something, it just kind of manifests itself, whether you're conscious about it or not. So it's just going to show up.
It definitely made itself, because it took really a lot longer than we anticipated. And I didn't even get what we did till like 6 months later when I was listening back. I was like, okay, I guess I succeeded in what I was setting out to do.
You know, real quick, just an aside, timelines on art projects, right? I think you said it took longer. And I think a lot of times I find that things I set my mind on or heart on or whatever take longer, but it's also part of, yes, I'm a procrastinator, but art, it's like everything in its time. Right. And I think so many people like abandon projects or don't stay committed to something for long enough for it to pay off. And it's just something that's maybe even on your mind all the time. That's the important thing, is just to kind of keep it on your mind. So I guess just as part of like a commentary on process as an artist or something.
You can't force it. You know, we were signed to a label, and it was on their time clock and their money. So there's that pressure on you. And it's just like everything I do musically, it's sort of like very organic and channeled. And I can't, if someone says, sit down now and play a song, I'm like, no, not unless I'm feeling it. You know, you have to be feeling it. Otherwise you're just delivering like,
we're not the kind of like, we don't, like the two of us don't show up at a party and it's like, give us the guitar, we're going to sing you guys some songs. It's like, maybe if we like really feel like it, but do you know what I mean? Like, it's more like, yeah, all right, well, what's the mood? Or we're going to record because this is how we feel like we want to do it now, you know, because we feel like it's going to be good, you know?
But then people will argue and say, well, any artist that's good, you know, can just get up and do this at any, you know, at the snap of a finger. And it's like, well, it's not us, you know.
And if you do that, then okay, not to get dark, but I mean, you end up kind of like a Robin Williams type figure, where you're really a tragic figure and you're not doing your art anymore for you. And I don't know, right. You become soulless and you end up ending it all, because it's all about who you're, you know, we all have to compromise and do stuff to put food on the table and et cetera. But to have a foot in both worlds and still maintain like, okay, this is a natural rhythm for me, I have to stay true to it to some degree. That's like part of finding that balance, I guess.
It really is. I've just fully left like that other world. You know, I'd rather starve than be in it.
I feel that most days.
I feel like I don't even exist in society, like on paper. It's just, I don't understand that reality. And it's just, it's crazy.
I think people just like to like torture themselves is what I've come to the conclusion. Cause it seems like people do all this stuff and it's like, you're like torturing yourself. Like, why do you do this? Why do we all have to do this thing or do that? Or why do we all have to go to this place? And it's, I think the society collectively agrees we need to like be miserable or something. But so we're just trying to like avoid that as much as possible.
Yeah. I think we are taught as a culture to be sadomasochists. So especially masochists, we're taught to be self-policing, self-hating absolutists.
Yeah. It's like the prisoners policing, the prisoners being the wardens in the prison, you know, it's like,
I mean, I don't escape self-hate even though I'm not in reality or working, you know, for the man.
None of us do. It's always with you, right?
But what I realized is even in being an artist and not being in that world, and you're in the world that we're in, you still have to come in contact with that, because the whole music industry is like its own institution. There's no freedom in being like on a record label. It's actually more confining than being working 9 to 5 at like the mall or something. You're still like under a microscope and you have to do things a certain way. It's kind of pretty repressed having people tell me like how I should dress and what's acceptable, what's not acceptable. So I don't know. I don't work well with others, I guess, unless they're right on the same page as me. Does not play well with others. That's like my new motto. Like, I'm going to get t-shirts.
But I mean, you mentioned earlier that you had no patience for school, and it's the same precedent or principle at work here. It's, you know, you're on, I don't know, we get to a point in our lives where it's like, I want to be on my schedule. I want to do things my way. And it's like,
well, why
right.
Shouldn't
and
you
why do? Shouldn't you? Yeah.
I, you know, I would go to school. I didn't know where my locker was. I'd show up in class with nothing and I didn't know what was going on. I think I was just so in my head in this fantasy world that I had and the reality I wanted to create that there was no possible way I could be in class. It was impossible. And I lived literally like a couple blocks down from the school. So I would just sneak out and walk home every day. Eventually I convinced my parents. I'm like, you know what? I can't do this anymore. They're like, okay, get a job. So I left in the 10th grade. I was like, I'm out of here. And then I went to Europe and New York and just traveled and saw tons and tons of bands. And it was like, that was my inspiration. You know, I lived for music at that point, but.
And you found your own education. You found your own school, which was probably those shows and your own time working on your craft. And it's like, that's what you were meant to do. And.
Yeah, for me, it was, I guess I was obsessed with two things growing up. It was finding true love and music. It's all I cared about, you know. I wasn't into drugs or anything. And then I sort of got into some spiritual things and I tried out a whole bunch of different religions and just kind of learned as I went along. I mean, I could be more book smart, but I think I've got some good street smarts and I'm definitely tuned into things in my own way. You know, I've never believed in like so-and-so says this is the way and followed it. I'm like, I want to just kind of make my own path and do what I want to do, regardless of whether it's right or wrong to somebody else, you know, I mean, within a moral guideline, you know, not gonna
right.
Go out.
Golden rule stuff. And I mean, you don't need a religion to tell you not to hurt another person. I think like most people have this extreme physiological response to even like trying to hurt another person. It's just, it goes against human nature, I think.
I was raised Catholic. I mean, I went to Catholic school. So it's kind of like those 10 commandments are kind of imprinted in me now.
Oh, if you're raised Catholic, Christian, whatever. I mean, I was raised Catholic too. It's like that shaming never leaves you. It's imprinted on whatever your memory field, or I like to play with the idea that consciousness isn't in our heads, but outside, and then we're bringing it in and participating in it. And that's just imprinted there, unfortunately, for this existence that I'm living through. And it sucks, but also it's part of the experience. It's part of having a shadow to kind of either run from, chase, or just reflect on, and to like be able to measure yourself against and know what you want or don't want and all those questions, right? So that's just all our trauma, all that bullshit it's like, why did I have to experience that? But then I don't know, if you get to a point where you're in the headspace you're at, or other people are in the headspace they're at, where they see it in a bigger perspective, it's easier to reorient yourself and embrace. Yeah.
Yeah. That's how you grow. You know, it's like, that's how a cell grows. It splits in half. There's some sort of things don't, you know, you got to like be shocked to change, you know? So it's like, the shock is what changes you. You know, if everything was just like great all the time and we were born and we lived in a beautiful garden and we got like, I don't know, got to play with toys all day and free food. I mean, I don't know, like what you would be the greatest thing for people to experience or whatever.
I'd be okay with that.
It'd be great and all, but like you wouldn't like, nothing would happen. Like there'd be nothing would happen. It wouldn't be interesting, you know?
No, you have to have a balance, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I learned the hard way. I went through a pretty rebellious dark phase and where I was just doing things I shouldn't have been doing and then it all backlashed and you grow from it and you reflect and then you don't do those things anymore.
And I guess it makes you appreciate more where you're at once you get there. And I don't know, I can't stay, the more you learn, the more you intuit or whatever, however you embrace and experience reality, there just seems to be something more that you can never put your finger on, but feels like you need to chase it. It's something you need to pursue. And again, that's why I like wanted to bring you guys on. It's like, I feel like that's what anyone that's a musician that I consider maybe like, or have a hint of that they're honest to their craft, I feel like that's kind of how they pursue life in general. And so I'm happy to hear all the things you're saying and have it all line up with my expectations, just to let you know.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so I guess what is the, we've touched on this a bit already, but I guess what do you hope your art to accomplish for people? What do you think, what are you hoping it'll open their eyes or minds to or anything like that? I mean, you're trying to communicate something. Yes, it's not like an absolutist message or anything, but it's creating a headspace for people to indulge in. And it's like, how do you encourage people to kind of reflect on that or what it's meant to inspire?
I would like our music to be an escape for people, like to take them to another world or dimension. You know, like when I was growing up and I would put on a record that I liked, I was just, boom, I was like gone out of reality. Like, whoa, where am I? Like, what is this? How, why am I feeling like this when I'm listening to this record, you know, and nothing else around me matters. It's sort of, I remember the first time I got a Smith's record. I got The Queen Is Dead for Christmas at my aunt's house. And I just went and like sat behind the Christmas tree with headphones on and just didn't eat, didn't open any presents. I didn't care about anything. I was just like, this music is so amazing. You know, I mean, obviously can't top the Smiths, but like just for someone to put on our record and have it take them somewhere else and inspire them to want to, you know, if they're creative, to do their own thing.
And again, the musical tradition and the human experience, like music for so long has been used in indigenous cultures to mediate these kind of interfaces between the dimensions or different realities, different worlds, whatever we perceive as us in space and the intersection between those two. And so they play their ikaros to soothe people and to bring them into different headspaces and so on. And Chris, you mentioned like the pyramids earlier, and I want to bring it back to that real quick because there's all these theories about, okay, what are the pyramids and this and that? And obviously the tomb is the most obvious and well publicized, but also there's questions again, why the dimensions, why this, why all this acoustical fine tuning? And so often it looks like that these were used as kind of like meditation chambers that were assisted through kind of like an acoustical psychedelic experience. And you even see this in like something like, if anyone reads Richard Marek's work, specifically like the Venus Blueprint, he talks about this, the Roslyn Chapel, which of course was, it was put in Da Vinci Code. So it's been forever tainted as an, but it's obviously a Gnostic temple that is, pays homage to all the world's religions, that pays homage to like the most fundamental of the religions, which seems to be a musical religion. And they even, there's evidence for all this acoustical fine tuning of that chapel and how it engendered certain headspaces for people. And that even gets into reincarnation, all this crazy shit. But the point is, yes, it's like there's this huge, deep metaphysical musical tradition throughout civilization that is still with us. again, like the secret society shit and all that stuff. It's like, what are they really paying homage to? And I think it's that kind of stuff, even if they don't even realize it.
Well, it would be great to heal people through music. I mean, Chris's goal was to like have our music be healing, right? By tuning it, pitching it to the love frequency and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's like such a huge topic, all that stuff. Like that's my favorite stuff to talk about. So let's see. I don't know. Yeah, totally. Music and heal at the essence of everything. It's like for sure, like healing. I mean, the Roslyn Chapel is awesome. Did you see the guy? There's like, you know about cymatics,
of course,
right?
Yeah.
Right. Well, did you see like where the guy, I didn't see the Da Vinci Code, so I don't even know what that's about. I just missed that one, but I know about the Roslyn Chapel and I know on the ceiling there's like three different, like, there's like pictures. And with basically this one guy realized that the pictures were the actual cymatics of the sounds. So he recreated the sounds from the pictures that were painted or engraved or whatever on the ceiling. And there was like three different songs or whatever. Apparently those songs, it's all to like raise the consciousness, just like the pyramids. Yeah, they say it's like a tomb, you know, conventional science is like where they buried the pharaoh, but like, I don't think they did that. I think it was for, you know, for initiation into like the higher mysteries. Is like, it was obviously for a myriad of reasons to have a pyramid, giant pyramid or whatever. But if you actually went in, the chambers are designed in a way that like, it's literally like, they resonate at different tones and it goes in basically like how your chakras would be like as you get deeper into the pyramid until you get to like the main sarcophagus. And that's where you would like lay in the sarcophagus and they'd ring it, you know, they'd hit it and it would make a tone and, you know, the sounds and the time of year and the way the stars were lined up and things like that. I mean, it was so you could like have this kind of like cosmic awareness is what I think. And that's what they did for the pharaohs and stuff, you know, to initiate them into like the higher knowledge or whatever, which is all based on, like you're saying, like it's based on music and stuff for sure, but it's also, you know, it's like the fundamentals of the universe, like all the religions all agree when you get down to the bottom of it, like everyone agrees that like a circle is a circle and that there's things like the flower of life and there's geometry and there's numbers and patterns and things like that that are all universal, you know. So I think it's all based on that stuff. It just, when it comes down to like everyday life, when they, what they tell like the great masses, you know, they don't talk about that kind of stuff or whatever. That's like the secret. Oh, don't tell anybody that stuff.
And know? It's like, why is it so secretive? And I've always subscribed to the idea that, yeah, it is actually quite liberating when people start digging into it. It's a mentally consciousness freeing experience, because, right?
Because it goes back to the thing of like, people like to torture themselves with their, yeah. And people were afraid that they're going to use it to like torture people or blow up the world or something. Probably, I think originally it was that way, and then I think it eventually mutated, changed to where it just ended up being where to keep the people who are the powers that be as the powers that be. But you know,
yeah,
using the knowledge to like control people as opposed to like protect them in a way, you know,
or like how it's everyone believes 13 is an unlucky number, but really it's a lucky number, you know. So everyone's afraid of that number. Nobody ever uses it. Because it's like, oh, 13.
I had no idea. Yeah, okay, yeah. 13's lucky. I'll remember that.
I don't know if it's lucky or unlucky, but there's like 13 days in the Mayan week, you know, and there's 13's like it's a magic number.
It's a mystical number. It's not, sure. I don't think
it's okay, unlucky.
As long as it's not unlucky, I won't be afraid to use it. So that's comforting.
Nah.
7's my number. I'm 7. Pisces, 7.
I've stumbled across 5. I think that's mine. So I'm sticking with that.
5, good. That's like the star. It's like a
sun
empowerment sign.
Authority, you know?
Yeah, totally.
I'm the sheriff.
That's a good one,
I guess. And you know, yeah, you were speaking on the pyramids again. I'm all over the map and what I'm into here. So why not just go there? But yeah, there's all these scripts and decent evidence for all these other tunnels and what have you below that seemed to insinuate, yeah, they were probably just for travel in one sense, but also they were very ritualistic and seemed to, again, try to mimic that descension into the underworld. What does that mean? And then like, how are you supposed to say you do get in touch with this world, then how do you deal with it in your waking life? And that's, I think, was part of it. It's like, you can actually touch a larger part of reality, but when you get it, it's going to be weird and you're not going to know what it is unless you know what you're looking at. And so this was like part of that process.
Well, it's like when you realize Did you ever have a moment where all of a sudden you literally connected to the whole universe? Like you've just not even being on drugs or anything where just like something clicks and then you feel like as big as the universe.
More
you know
recently,
what I'm talking about?
Yes. Before that, no, but I get what you're saying now. Yeah.
Well, that happened to me one time and like you can't live day to day life in that state. I don't know what happened. Just I took a trip 8 hours out of LA and I came back and I don't know if it was, I'm like, am I hypoglycemic? Like what the hell's happening to me right now? Where I just had this moment where I like was out of my body, but completely conscious and awake. And I could feel like the ocean that's miles away and like the whole space and everything just like huge. And then my whole perspective of what I was looking at was not through my eyes. It was through something else and everything seemed like smaller. And it was, I thought I was like, I'm like, am I dying? Like what's happening? But no, just like connecting to everything, you know, like
that inspired one of your songs, right?
Which one?
I was reading in a Guardian article that you recounted your out of body experience. Maybe it was a different one.
Yeah. Yeah. That stuff does inspire music. It inspires some.
And I've never had something like that, like an out of body. Maybe in dreams. I don't know where I've been or not been in my dreams. If it's my own head, if it's always me out in another dimension, I haven't made up my mind on that, but you know, I've never had anything quite like that, but I respect the experiences of people that do and what they're able to bring back from that, because so many people have done it and it's so convincing the information they bring back oftentimes, because it's you could easily say it's in your own head, but then there's all this objective information that's often brought back. And again, this goes pretty far back in the shamanic tradition. There's this book called Cosmic Serpent by Jeremy Narby, and he spent a lot of time with indigenous cultures in the Amazon, one particular group, but you know, he was exploring their cave paintings and their general artwork, their philosophy, how they healed each other, their rituals. And he's saying that they were like onto stuff, you know, the structure of the DNA molecule thousands of years before Francis Crick, who was tripping on LSD, discovered it. You know, we didn't even discover LSD without acid. Not that everyone has to take acid to experience these things. Like you're a perfect example. There are, I guess, sober ways of doing it, because we know humans even produce their own entheogens. Like we produce our own DMT in low doses. We produce stuff that resembles THC in low doses. The psychedelic experience, however you want to define it, it's so open to interpretation. It's just like, how do you shift into a different reality from everyone else? Because everyone just takes up everyone. Everyone takes society's reality as the truth. You know, they don't make their own, as we were talking about right off the beginning.
Well, of course, some
people do. You know, I generalize. I paint with a broad brush, and that's my own fault. But so when I say that, it's not like literal.
Right. Well,
you can, I don't know, I'm realizing more and more, like, you can pretty much tap into all that just without drugs, you know?
Right. I was just talking to this guy, Tom Brown, and he was saying the same thing. He's like, you know, meditation, this and that. And I've explored other people that do that. And it's just like, there's so many ways that like Native American culture is used. Deprivation, that's like the whole stereotypical vision quest thing. Just go in the forest and deprive yourself of food and water and you're going to start seeing things. And you do.
Well, yeah, you're like your body or your whatever, your body, you got your mind, your body and your consciousness and all that. And basically like all that stuff, it's like tuning into like a radio station, you know, like it's like tuning your mind or whatever into whatever vibration that you want to tune into. But then it's like, how do you do it? And then a way that a lot of people do it, and I do this too, is are you familiar with stuff like binaural beats or isochronic tones?
Yeah,
or
I interviewed
things like that?
This fellow Tom Campbell, and he was one of the first guys to really be pushing those. I think a lot of them came out of the Monroe Institute from the 70s, but it might even go back further. But yeah, Tom Campbell, I have some connection with those, yeah.
Yeah, the Hindu people, and they've been doing that for a long,
sure,
way before even them, like where they ring two bells and one bell is one tone and one's the other tone and they're next to your ear and they're really close in tone. It basically creates the different brainwave patterns. So your brain entrains to that sound. But yeah, basically while we're talking right now, it's like, you know this, I'm sure, that our brains would be in like the beta state. And then when you do something creative or you watch TV or you do something that's more like you're flowing and in tune with stuff, when you're like more like relaxed, you go into alpha. And then below that is theta, which is like the dream state, and below that's delta, which is like deep sleep or like unconsciousness or whatever. So if you can, but most of like the mystical stuff happens in like the theta state or like the low alpha state. So if you're just like walking around and like jibber jabbering down the street, it's probably not going to be like a mystical experience that's going to happen, but you know, like, cause you're not tuned into that. Cause you can like tune in like a radio to the whatever, the infinite number of frequencies that exist. So yeah, I think that you can totally have all that and have all the, everything that you want if you can like, if you know how to get there, you know, and you don't need drugs to do it. I think drugs like do that, change your brain waves, which is a big part of it too, you know, to like tuning into stuff, but you don't really even need that. You can do it with sounds. And like that goes
right
back to the
music. It's like, yeah, there's all these catalysts, right? But we have the process open to ourselves. I mean, yeah, we don't need outside. It's just a matter of getting in tune with something that lets you get in touch with that space.
And that's the whole music. And that's why the, you know, we were saying like the shamans and they have, you know, rattles and there's rhythms and there's certain rhythms and there's certain exact numbers and patterns and things that are out there for sure that you can look up on your own and people can find on their own, that there's definite exact frequencies, patterns, rhythms, and things like that that you can play or you can listen to that will entrain your mind or your body to that sound, which will give you a certain effect, I guess, to heal or to tune into something else or to channel something or to learn, to have a greater memory retention or to remember something from your past. There's all different frequencies that allow you to do all those different kinds of things. And it's just a matter of like tuning into them with sound. I actually have a whole online shop where I do like meditation and like sound healing music.
Oh, so cool.
If y'all want to,
yeah, no, on Etsy. We'll provide links and everything for all that. All right. So we're getting close to an hour, so I don't want to keep you guys too much longer, but I have maybe a couple more questions. Maybe we'll turn the conversation a little bit. So I've noticed in some of your photography, you get pictured with striped creatures more often than not, tigers and zebras specifically. So do you have any attraction to those animals? And maybe what is your attraction, if anything?
I don't know. Like we started the band and it was a lot of lions and tigers and stuff. And I don't know. We just like kind of liked that when we started. And we didn't even realize that like other bands were doing lions and tigers. We were doing it. And then we started getting some press and stuff. And we're like, oh, hey, this other band's doing, has like tiger pictures. And we're like, oh my God, I think everybody's doing it. I don't know. I think everybody like tuned into lions and tigers like a few years ago. And we were just like into it. You know, I don't know. It was just what was in the air. So zebras, I don't know. That's more Dexy. She likes.
Go.
What are you doing? She's talking to the cat. Dexy was more into like the zebra. I don't know. What was your thing with zebras? I mean, I get why you like them, but.
I went through like a 5-minute phase with zebras. I was into the lions because Chris is a Leo. And the tiger thing, I've just always liked tigers.
I mean, they're all amazing animals.
I wouldn't mind being eaten by a tiger.
Well.
If a tiger wanted to eat me,
I might be a little concerned. I don't know if I'd let it. I'd fight it, but it'd probably overpower me. Okay, so have either of you read any Philip K. Dick, even a book or watched a movie or anything?
No, I feel like I should, though.
I've skimmed through some of his
books. Cool. We don't have to have a conversation. It just caught my eye because he, in one of his, I think, possibly his greatest book, even though it's not his best written, called Valis, he recounts his kind of shamanic experience where he downloads all this information through a pink laser and it comes to him that it's called zebra, that this teaching energy is this teaching pink energy calls itself zebra. And so there's this,
that's cool.
You know, there's a number of us committed to this idea of what is the zebra. And it does, in my opinion, just kind of represents the quintessence or the ether or kind of this larger fishbowl we find ourselves swimming in. So there's this particular photo of you two where you're just kind of like blending into the zebra on the background of the Great Wall. And I saw it.
It wasn't even planned that.
Oh, it's brilliant. Yeah. I'm amazed. I guess those are the best photographs.
I was wearing a zebra sweater. We were on a photo shoot and we were going to a different location and we walked through some underpass and there was a giant zebra graffitied on the wall. And I was like, oh wow, this matches my sweater. Let's take a picture.
Yeah. I can't believe that was just random. That's amazing. Because yeah, it's really in line with everything we've been talking about, is like artists as channelers of, you know, something larger, a larger almost magical realm. And so I know I see my, what I do in very silly, but also I take it seriously. You know, I see this as a type of magic. I'm participating in magic in my own way. I do things with symbols. I do things with conversations. I juxtapose images, sounds, whatever, to create an experience in people's heads. And in the same way you do that with music, or a visual artist will do that with their paintings or drawings. It's all part of that process of like getting people acquainted with, hey, this is actually another reality that exists, and you don't have to subscribe to the spoon-fed one you're told from birth is like what you have to endure the rest of your life. So that symbolically, it was a very, it just jumped at me.
Wow. I like that pink laser thing you're talking about. I was just, I actually want to build something that's, you know, like with the sound frequencies and lighting. I want to do like something with like a purple sort of, you know, like those tanning beds, like something like that. That's like all purple light with the sound frequency that goes with that, and just lay in it and see what happens.
It would probably really trip you out. And it might be worth exploring. It's like, you know, a sensory deprivation only mediated through purple photons. It's kind of strange, but definitely worth trying.
Well, color can be very healing. I know someone who was a quadriplegic, and he cured himself through sound and color therapy.
Yeah, sometimes it's like just these miraculous results for people. And I'd encourage anyone that's just like, hey, I have something wrong, what should I do? Don't just pick one, just try fucking everything. If it's like your health or your life or just like something you want to try to change or fix. I think the universe always tells us it's not one thing, it's everything. So just like explore.
I am still shocked that people just like go to the doctor and that's it. And then they talk to the doctor and the doctor tells them something and then they don't like it and then they get pills and then maybe they go to another doctor and that's it. And then it's like, if there's something wrong with them, it's like,
well, no, you know what?
Look it up online, like read about like crazy doctors in like other countries that like fix that. Find book. You know what I mean? Like, I don't understand. Like, I get there's like, people are still like very like locked into like stuff that's, I don't know. It's like back to the people like to torture themselves thing, I think.
Well, I think when, if you go to the doctor and the doctor says you have cancer, that's when you get cancer because it manifests.
I don't know.
It's all mind over matter. I really do.
You know what? I can respect both of your opinions on that. There's a little bit of, well, I mean, there's evidence for both. When you really look at the literature, it's like weird stuff where it's just total mind over matter. And that's unusual. And it might, again, I don't know.
Maybe, but not. I get what you're saying. Maybe not.
And don't not go to the doctor. Like, sure, go to the doctor. But like,
Think they're going to fix you every time. I don't know. We have to take some responsibility for our own consciousness. And it's not that I don't want to respect someone's expertise and I wouldn't listen to what they're telling me, but it's also like, I got to make my own decisions and like think about this, what's best for my situation and like how it, I don't know. So absolutely.
Like, if you get your leg bitten off by a shark, I don't think herbs natural medicine is going to help that. Doctors are great. They you definitely need them. But
it's Western versus Eastern medicine. Western's always like been pretty decent. Again, we've been cutting open people for hundreds of years now, both illegally and legally. So we know how to like deal with traumas in a decent way. And that's, I guess, Western medicine's contribution to the larger consciousness field, I think. But then, yeah, we try to give prescriptions and create a whole, literally a drug industry, a pill popping industry for people to abuse just to basically numb their existential pain in so many ways. And also, even if they have serious disorders, right? It's like, we live in a toxic society. No shit, they have all these problems with them. It's like, why can't our doctors say that? They don't even say that. They're not talking about what's the cause of all our chronic health problems. It's always, here's some pills, here's this kind of band-aid on a giant festering sore.
There's just like a label for everything.
Yeah, totally.
But yeah, right, exactly.
I mean, I'm probably manic bipolar or something, but like, I mean, I'm pretty sure I am.
Yeah, we don't need a doctor to figure that out.
I'm not going to take medicine for it, you know?
It's part of you. And it's also, again, like if you're getting through life and it's not like destroying all your relationships and you're dealing.
Oh, no, it is for sure. Yeah, it is.
It's not just you. It's your environment too. It's like whatever the way that like a cell grows is based on the environment that it's in, into. So it could be a lot of things too that people think they have all these problems with themselves. It's all stuff. It could be so many things that are outside of them that they have no idea that's affecting them. You know, that's causing them.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's not good for me to be living in this city, Los Angeles. It's just, you know, put me out on a farm or on the beach or in the desert. I'm completely different. I feel like very tense living in Hollywood. And, you know, I've noticed lately, you know, just having extreme highs and lows. And I started, you know, meditating, and that's really kind of balanced things out for me.
So what's it like being thoughtful people living in a place like LA?
It's really.
Well, you know, LA is actually, there's a lot of like, spiritually kind of, I mean, there's a lot of like new age mumbo jumbo kind of stuff, but there's like a lot of like sincere, like real, like healer and metaphysical people and stuff here. That's definitely here. But I mean, yeah
but then there is a great movement here of people into higher consciousness, but then you have all those ones that are like these horrid vampires that preach, you know, peace and love and spirituality and oneness, and then they're like the most negative hypocrites you'll ever meet.
Usually, yeah, they're even worse. Mm.
And you get so taken. I'm like, oh, I just so buy into this person. They're this and that, and then they just turn out to be like total crap. You just feel like
Yeah, but there is like the perception is of like LA and like Hollywood and everything for sure that it's all like soulless and all this stuff. But
no, it's not.
But it's soulless. I mean, the industry of stuff that's here for sure is in a lot of ways, but not. There's definitely like some major cosmic stuff happening.
Yeah, I can respect that. I mean, that's everywhere in America, really. Every place is industry. Every place is business. It's like, and then what the undercurrents are, what the reality of like, I guess people's spiritual pursuits and whatnot are always below the surface. So that's, yeah, it's my own superficiality just asking that question. But also, yeah, it's like what my perception is.
You could go to, totally, you could go to Sedona, Arizona to go like, you know, meditate on the hill, and on the way in, you'll get hit up by like 1,000 tourist traps that are trying to make money off of like,
I love Sedona.
Cosmic meditation tours or whatever they're selling you, you know, like the new business stuff is going to be that way. But, but yeah, the people, I don't know. LA's, it's better than people think it is. I think it gets a bad reputation.
I think I'm ready to move.
But I think we're ready to move.
So you guys mentioned a new album you're working on very early on in the interview, but I didn't want to go there just because I wanted to save that for the end. So maybe you can tell us about what you're working on, when that's going to be out, and any touring or whatever else you guys are doing.
The new record is finished, and we're just trying to figure out who's going to put it out, or if we're going to put it out ourselves, or once that's out.
The new album's is a lot different than the first. It's the same in a lot of ways that it's the two of us that basically wrote it and put it together and everything. But this time we have a full band, and we played it all as a band, and we basically did the whole recording live. So it's us. So we have a bass player named Vega and a drummer named Charlie. And as a four piece, we did it, two guitars, two bass and drums. And we played it like a band, and we recorded it in the studio. And we did like hardly no overdubs at all. I think we spent maybe like 3 days tracking everything. And then we just spent some time like mixing it and stuff. So it's a lot different than the first record that was more keyboards and
electronic
kind of things or whatever, but it's still the same themes. It's very like spacey, and songs are a little longer than the first record where we get
they're a lot longer. This record only has 8 songs because each song is like almost 4 to 6 minutes, right?
Yeah. it's more like elaborated on. It's more elaborate, I guess, but even though we did it a lot simpler recording and playing wise. But yeah, it's called, what are we calling it? Still the same name?
I think it's called Jupiter.
It's called Jupiter, yeah.
We went from the moon to Jupiter. I was going to call it Stranded on Earth, but because everybody basically is. But yeah. Then I was like, I'm stuck.
Yep, we're all here on the prison planet. And are you going to be doing any touring after that gets launched? Are you going to stay in the LA area? Or what's your plan?
With Alex Jones.
I'm sure we'll tour.
Yeah, we'll tour probably, but I don't.
I just got off the tour. Touring is so
Yeah, why don't we just wrap up with that? Can you just give us like the opinion on touring? Like, is it the most exhausting experience anyone can go through? Just traveling, performing?
Well, I have another band that I started back in February, and it's kind of like, you know, it's a new band. It hasn't been around. So we did the whole like, well, actually, Magic Wand still tours in a big van too. So I was like, we did the van tour across America, but actually Magic Wands is toured in like SUVs and shit because we're a 2-piece. But no, I love playing. I love playing in different cities. It's just, I'm not a fan of driving across America. There's some great spots, and then there's some spots that are just so depressing. It's like, oh my God.
Right. You realize the former heart of the country.
People are in the middle of, you know, Texas. Yeah. You just see like,
What's wrong with Texas?
I don't know.
It's just an example. No, I get it's like, you know, we're kind of rotting from the core in this country. And that's a pretty harsh way of saying it, but
there's no, it's like the shit food on the traveling. It's like, why doesn't someone open up a fast food organic shop or something? You know? So like, what do you have to eat? Like pizza burgers at the gas station?
Yeah, the food
like
sucks. That's a good point about touring.
Subway and McDonald's and Burger King. Like everywhere I went across the country, it was just like fast food. You know, I mean, I've always felt this way about touring and traveling, but it's just, yeah, it's tiring.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was just curious. Yeah. I think we'll wrap up there officially. Chris and Dexy Valentine of the Magic Wands. Thank you for being with me today. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.